Hey!
I've got one more game.
I'm about to dial in.
Load them up.
Now enter in the lobby.
Give me the
controller.
Get your own.
Can I play?
I'm doing a side quest.
Downloading a new skin.
I'm back with a clan.
With a squad, let's go.
Wanna play co-op?
Got a mission to do.
Attack, attack.
Retreat!
Fire in the hole!
You're gaming and caning the broadband? Wi-Fi 7 on EE makes every device work better, even yours.
Yo, guys, let's loot.
Go, go, go.
We're moving.
Upgrade to Wi-Fi 7 on EE and we'll sort the switch for you.
43.7% UK availability. Smart Hub Pro and Smart Wi-Fi Pro available with selected EE full fiber plans. Terms apply.
I play with a lot of guys, hundreds and hundreds of guys. He is the best guy I've played with. And I'm not just saying that because he just said his number retired. Like, he is through and through one of the greatest guys. I can still text him right now and he'll respond right away. He's always happy to see you. He'd help you out if you needed help. And he's just a beauty guy. Afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves here, back-to-back Eppies. Tim, much-needed Thanksgiving weekend, so we're cutting loose tomorrow. This is our last one for the week. But yeah, thanks for joining us. How are you, Tim? You're all packed up, ready to go on your trip?
It's funny. Yeah, I just finished packing a little while ago. I still got to do like the backpack stuff, the carry-ons and all that, but all my clothes are ready to go. We're flying out about midday tomorrow up to Lansing for the weekend, long weekend, and I think we'll do like the whole wholesome family Thanksgiving stuff, like cutting down the tree, and I think they're drawing names for Christmas gifts, and we'll go to the Michigan State football game because her dad works there, so it'll be a nice long weekend.
So you're fully ingrained in the family festivities now.
Well, this will be my first time doing all that stuff with them, so at the next time we talk, I will be. Yeah, the answer is yes.
Is this the weekend? Like, is this the one?
No, John. This is Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Christmas is Christmas. Thanksgiving is Thanksgiving. That's what it's about.
Did everybody catch that hesitation? I think Tim's gonna propose this weekend. I think, and that maybe this is where I should be quiet, because if you do propose, she listens to the show and she's like, oh, maybe I should, you know, be ready. But maybe I should stop bringing it up. But I do think this is the week. I'm excited for you. It's very, very nice. Because you've been dating for what now, a year?
Yeah,
on and off?
A little more.
More than a year.
Oh, man. Yep.
I proposed to Danielle inside of a year, just to put it into perspective. That's kind of the norm.
Inside a year of dating, but you were chasing her for 2 years before that, right?
4 years before.
Four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She had to, you know, kiss a couple toads before you get to the prince, I guess. But no. That's exciting. Very good. That'll be fun. I'm excited for you. What did you think of the recent interviews? We've been burning up the interviews with Olivier and Lomberg.
Yeah, they were great. The Lomberg one was great, but that one didn't surprise me. Like, I've seen him mic'd up before. He plays with a smile on his face. So, like, him being high energy and personable and talkative and all that was not unexpected, although yeah. Still great. Like, so fun. And that was a lot of cool. And it was cool to hear him talk about the culture in Florida and bringing that to Calgary and all that. Mm-hmm. And then the Olivier one yesterday, that one did surprise me. He was just so, like, smart and well-spoken and confident and, like, I don't know, just really cool. I don't know what I expected. I didn't think that much about it, I guess. But that was really great and a really cool just character guy in the room.
Yeah, they were both great. I agree. Nicely done. Good, just good guys. Good guys in the locker room. It's refreshing to talk to guys who don't think their farts don't stink. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we know our role. We do it well, and that's why we're successful. Beautiful. Gives me hope for the younger generation. Not that these guys are young, but it was very good. People seem to enjoy it. Usually, there's always a handful of people just like, nice interview, dummy. Like, you suck at interviewing. Most people think it was a good interview. Well done. But anyways, moving on. I just got back from San Jose, Tim. Did you know that?
Yeah, I do, because I was going to go, and then I didn't go. So how was it, I guess? Was it fun or whatever?
Well, I tell you what, it was one of the best trips I've been on in a long time. And it started off terribly to the point where I looked at my wife when we first got to San Jose. I'm like, I wish we would not have came. Like, it's going to be awful. This is going to suck. What are we doing? It was just a terrible, terrible start to the trip. It was awful. Everything that could have went wrong went wrong. And then we somehow miraculously got there and it ended up being a terrific trip. Like really, really fun. I'll start at the beginning. So we flew out of Traverse City. And like Tim's saying, you pack two bags. You check bags and your carry-on bags. Well, I had my hockey gear in a big bag. And in Traverse City, I haven't flown in a while since pre-COVID, I think. So it's been a long time. I guess we went to Rome last year, but we flew out of a bigger city. So I get there the typical like 45 hour before the flight, probably 50 minutes. By the time we get up to the gate and check our bags, it's like 40 minutes before the flight.
And this is a tiny airport. That's what for people who don't think that's more than enough time in Traverse most of the time.
I've shown up 30 minutes before and walked right on the plane. Breeze through security. There's never a line. It's not a huge issue. We're flying American Airlines. I get there and I'm checking in my bags. And all of a sudden the lady checking me in goes, "Oh no." I'm like, "What? Is my bag too heavy?" She goes, "Oh, you're within 45 minutes of the flight." I'm like, "Yeah, it's lots of time. You know, don't worry about it. There's nobody here. It's just me at the gate. Nobody."
"No, it's okay."
And she's like, "No, like the system won't let me check you in anymore. After 45 minutes, it locks me out. You can't get on this flight unless you don't want to check bags. And I have to check bags with my gear." And so my head starts spinning. I'm like, "Well, what do we do?" And I look at my wife and immediately the first thing that comes to mind was, "You're going to have to check my bags on the next flight because I'm getting on this one." That's my immediate thought process. And that's how selfish I am, I think. But then cooler heads prevailed. I'm like, "You can't bail on your baby and your wife and all your stuff." So we ended up having to miss that first flight. And my parents dropped me off and we're sitting in the airport. No car. The next flight doesn't leave for hours and hours away. We're missing our connection to go to California. And at the same time, Chicago is being pounded with the huge storm. Massive rain, wind, snow going into Chicago, and all these flights are just getting canceled and delayed all over the place. So we regroup. I finally get to the gate. Again, when the lady comes back from, because that's how small the airport is, the lady who checks you in leaves the gate, goes to the plane, and helps with the baggage. It's such a small airport. So she finally comes back an hour and a half later. And by the way, the plane I was supposed to be on got delayed an hour. It didn't take off until like 6:37 a.m. And I'm sitting there. We could get this bag on no problem. Like, and I'm just sitting there thinking that. But anyways, that's a whole other story. She comes back. We get a new flight. We're scheduled to fly out at noon. Fine. I go home. Well, actually, my wife and I go get breakfast. We come back to the airport. Noon flight has been pushed back to 4. Okay, we go home. Whatever. Go back to the airport at 4. That flight has been pushed back to 6:30. Okay, we leave again. We have to do some stuff for the house. We come back at 5:36. That flight has now been pushed back to 8. Keep in mind, my connection in Chicago is at 8:40. So I'm not going to make my connection, but it's going to be tight. I'm going to pull into Chicago at 8:30, jump on the next plane. It's very, very tight. So this whole time.
You gain an hour, right?
In Chicago. I gain an hour. Yeah. So American Airlines this whole time keeps trying to rebook me. And they do this now without you even prompting them. So I'm getting messages from the people in San Jose because they booked my flight. They're like, "Hey, you're getting rebooked till tomorrow morning. Out of Chicago, is everything okay?" And I'm like, "No, I don't want to be rebooked. People at the gate said I'll be able to get on that flight." And so I keep having these wrestling matches with American Airlines. They rebook me, I rebook back. They rebook me, I rebook back. We did it 4 times within a span of a half an hour. Finally, we get on the flight to go to Chicago. It's now 8:20. The flight leaves out of Chicago at 8:40. So I'm just thinking there's no way we're going to make it. We get there super fast to Chicago. And this is drawn out. So it's just, I apologize, but it was a long 24 hours. Keep in mind, we got to the airport at like 5 a.m. and now it's 8 p.m. We get to Chicago. It is now 8:30 p.m. We got there crazy fast. We land. I checked the flight out of Chicago. It's delayed till 9. I'm like, "Great, we're going to make it. This is fantastic. Something is finally going my way." We get on the tarmac in Chicago, Tim, and we just sit there.
That's a long one. Yeah.
And we sit there. And we sit there. I guess everybody was trying to get into Chicago at one time. And so there was a million planes waiting to get to a gate. We sat on the tarmac for 1 hour after we landed. So we got in at like 8:40, 8:30. We didn't get off that plane till 9:30. My plane's already left to go to California. It was literally across the hall, the plane that was leaving up, and it was like a 2-minute walk. So I'm upset. I'm just like, great. Now we got to find a hotel. I'm texting the San Jose people. Hey, will you guys pay for a hotel? Because I want to, you know, make sure my expenses are covered. Anyways, we get off the plane. We disembark. I'm just distraught. We're going to have to stay the night, wake up in the morning, fly out. We're not going to get into California until like noon, miss the pickleball thing. We're going to maybe miss a lot more stuff. I'm like, let's just go walk by that gate. Let's just in case, you know, it's right up the way. And so we casually walk over. We're not even trying to, you know, to catch a flight. We're not running by any means. And I see people mulling around the gate. I'm like, what? Maybe. Maybe. My phone had died by this point, so I wasn't able to keep checking. And so we get up to the gate, and they haven't left. I'm like, wow. But I've already been rebooked. And so I go to this gate, and I go to the gate agent, and I show him my original paper ticket. And I go, I'm on this flight. And he looks in the computer. He's like, no, you're not. Well, I have the ticket. Oh, you must have been rebooked. Let me see what I can do. And at this point, they're checking people in. I'm like, come on, just get me on this flight, baby. Like, let's go. Get me on this flight. He's looking. He's helping people check. And all of a sudden, he goes, boom, here's your tickets, Mr. and Mrs. Scott. You guys are good. Have a good trip to San Francisco. I'm like, wow, what a miracle. We jump on the plane. We're the last ones on the plane. We get our seats. We pull away from the jet bridge, and we're sitting, and we're sitting, and we're sitting. And all of a sudden, the pilot comes on the intercom, and he goes, well, folks, we talked to the tower, and there's a log jam to try to get out of Chicago because of all the weather, which might pose a problem to us, because we've been waiting here to get out for the last couple hours, and we have a curfew, and we're not allowed to fly after a certain point. So if we don't get out of here in the next 20 to 30 minutes, we're going to have to go back to the gate and dock, and then we'll try it again in the morning.
What? I never heard of that.
And I'm like, because they're like truckers where they can only be at work for a certain amount of time, I guess.
Okay.
And so I'm just like, great. Now, like after getting this far and, you know, crossing that hurdle, we're getting on the plane thinking it's a miracle. We're going to pull back to the gate. And literally 5 minutes after that, we were in the air. So I don't know what happened. He must have just told the whatever the tower that, and they got us out of there. And we got to San Francisco. Got a rental car, arrived in San Jose at like 3 a.m. San Jose time. So it was literally 28 hours, roughly, from waking up in the morning, getting to the airport, and then getting in our bed in San Francisco. And that's when I told my wife when we woke up in the morning, I'm like, this sucks. Like, what are we doing here? Like, this is so lame, because I was just thinking, we missed last night. They had a big pickleball tournament. Jumbo and his wife are huge pickleball fans. I'm getting all these text messages. The boys got banged up, and it sounded like a great time. Like, damn it. Like, I really wanted to be there for that. Then we're going to have the game on right away on the Friday. Then we're going to have a game on a Saturday, and there's no real downtime. So, but all that aside, it worked out being great. We woke up, did the red carpet. We did the alumni game, and it was just a blast. It was an absolute blast seeing all the guys again and Jumbo and everybody. It was just like stepping back into my NHL career. It was so weird, but it was just awesome. Then meeting guys I've never met before. Like, the gem of the weekend was Danny Heatley. There's just a wonderful human being. And I've never met him before. And you hear all these stories. Oh, I'm an effing all-star, this and that. And like, you get these negative connotations of him. He's just a normal dude. You know what I mean? Just balding. He looks like Ryan Getzlaff hairline. Just a great guy. Like, I piled around with him for a long time. It was him and Al Stalock and Pavelski and Douglas Murray. And that was kind of Jason Demers. It was just it was a good time. Yeah. Very enjoyable.
How were the fan interactions? Cause I got a couple of videos of people, like the guy that sent the jersey over during the game. Someone came up to you like during when you were watching. What was all of that like?
It's amazing how many listeners we have in San Jose. Cause we did this teal carpet before the actual game. Dozens and dozens, and I'm not over exaggerating, probably 50 people to 100 people. And it wasn't a long teal carpet, probably a couple hundred people, but at least half of them like, I love your show, man. How's Tim doing? How's the chickens? This and that. It was so humbling to see the amount of people who listen to us and follow the show and are Sharks fans. So it was really, really great. And yeah, at the game, Scott jerseys everywhere. I think I signed 4 or 5 of them. There was just, I feel bad for the people on our Slack channel. They were trying to find me, and I was just, it was running around a little bit. I didn't want to go on the concourse and be distracted and stuff. So it was, We got some fans out there. San Jose is it's a great hockey market. For those of you who haven't been to a game in San Jose and you want to go to like an away game, reasonably priced tickets, always a full barn from what I see, great seating everywhere, and just a great game environment. It was a lot of fun. I'd never seen a game from that perspective in San Jose, and it was great. Jumbo, or the Sharks did a great job for Jumbo. They took over the whole like concourse on one end of the building. It was impressive. Then we had a couple of suites and press bar boxes for our own family and stuff. So it was showtime. It was really, really fun. And the boys were gunned up. I told Tim some stories I can't tell on the show. It was a lot of fun. Like it was a lot of fun. I wish maybe in the Patreon, I'll tell the guys there what's going on. 'Cause it was a blast.
What about the game itself? Where you skated? How were you moving around?
Well, it was intimidating because when you look at the rosters, like my goalie was Nabokov, and he made one of the best saves I've ever seen in my life in this game. James Shepard, cross ice, the guy's probably 48. James Shepard gets all of this shot. Nabokov comes diving across with a glove. Boom! Like a beautiful glove save. But there's like Ryan Clough. There's Jumbo Joe. There's Patty Marleau, Douglas Murray, Joe Pavelski, Jonathan Chichu, Danny Heatley, Dan Boyle. Something was up his behind. He was like trying his hardest. I'm like, Boyle. He was on my team. And I was telling him, like, pump the brakes a little bit. It's a little embarrassing. Like, this is supposed to be like an exhibition. He's out there diving and blocking shots and stuff. Owen Nolan, my old buddy from Minnesota Wild and Thorold Blackhawks were there. But it was good. I got an assist my first shift. I was playing a line with Michael Healy and Tommy Wingles. That was my first line. Yeah, we picked up a point. We played good. I got a couple of hits. I rang one off the crossbar and Al Stalock. A shot from outside the top of the circle, snapper. If someone would have had a gun, it was going 91 miles an hour. It was a bomb, an absolute bullet. Crossbar out of play, but I felt good.
Go ahead.
I felt bad because I was really seeing the puck well. Because I poke check Jumbo a couple times and the fans didn't really like that. He was on a rush and I go, thank you. And I would laugh at him when I do it. I'm like, ah, suck a Jumbo. And I tap it away from him. He's so I felt a little guilty doing that. But it was a lot of fun. Everybody was trying. I think 70% for the most part. So it wasn't one of those exhibition games where no one gave a damn. It was a good, fast paced game. It was the hottest ticket in town. I was talking to some people who worked for the organization. They said they had so many ticket requests and people reaching out and try to get into that game because we played where the Barracuda plays and it seats 4,000. It was to the rafters, jam packed. It was such a neat little intimate environment. I was very happy to be in a part of it. It was so cool.
Well, the Sharks and the league covered it really well on social media, sharing the banner raising and the speeches and stuff. And the one from, was it the GM who shared the story about him taking care of a homeless woman?
Yeah.
And not to tell anyone for like 20 years, you know, like just the guy that Jumbo is and just the way that people speak about him, you know, he's really somebody special.
Yeah, that was Douglas Murray. I guess out of nowhere, they call him Crankshaft. And they said, Cranky, we need your help moving somebody. And then he just didn't ask any questions. And he showed up and it was this homeless woman with two kids. And he found out that it was Tabea and Joe Thornton who had bought this person a place, gotten everything taken care of, and they just needed help moving her stuff, and Cranky went and helped her move. So this is selfless stuff from him. He's just such a great dude. Yeah, it was all in all a great weekend. Jumbo was just his Jumbo self. I don't know if I'm sure none of you know him personally, but just from what you see on camera and on the ice, he's the exact same guy off the ice. Just a life of the party, never in a bad mood, always jovial, always making sure everybody's doing okay. Like just beautiful. He gets to the mic when he's doing his speech and he goes, let me feel the love, San Jose. And the place just erupts and he does a little dance and he's like having fun. He's got the little Gord Downie suit on with top hat and stuff that Gord Downie did for his last tour around Canada when he was with the Tragically Hip. So it was beautiful. Really, really fun.
Reminded me of like McConaughey a little bit, just like that effortless, like character, personality, confidence. Like he can say anything and the crowd just goes nuts type of thing. And I mean, I think I've told this before, but the only time I met Jumbo was with you in Detroit and we had dinner with him and a few other guys. But it was before the dinner where we sat down with him, Burns, and it was a rookie at the time, was that Ferraro, right? Yeah. And Burns was mad at you from that prank thing from years earlier. And Ferraro was super quiet because he was like 19 at the time. But Jumbo sat next to me and he was talking to me. He looked me in the eye, shake my hand, asked where I was from. asking about stuff for the podcast. He showed me how to subscribe to it on his phone. Or I showed him, like, genuine, like, and then I never saw him again. And that's just how he treats the people around him. So just a great guy. I'm glad you had fun.
Yeah, the speech was great. He was the best part of the speech was he listed off all the nicknames of all the guys he's played with. And it was just so funny. It gave the people an inside look at the life of Joe Thornton, because he would give these guys nicknames. Like, that was his thing. He would see a guy and give him a nickname, and he bounced through all the guys that he knew. And it was a lot of fun. He touched on the Thomas Hertl story when he scored 4 goals versus the Rangers. And you hear Jumbo in the background. If I scored 4 goals, I'd whip my thing out and be doing something with it. And so he goes, I stand by that statement. If I ever score 4 goals, that's what I'm going to do. So he's just like, the fans loved it. He was just a class act through and through. The mayor of the town talked to us before the game in like a little side room where everybody was just kind of having a couple of beers before the game. And he's like, you know, I called Joe and I wanted this to be Joe Thornton Day. And Joe looked me right in the eye and he said, how about Joe Thornton Weekend? And Joe was sitting right beside me. He goes, oh, weekend's a little better than day, ain't big boy? And so he got the Joe Thornton Weekend for the San Jose area. And he's just like, it was just a class act. I think I play with a lot of guys, hundreds and hundreds of guys. He is the best guy I've played with. And I'm not just saying that because he just had his number retired. Like, he is through and through one of the greatest guys. I can still text him right now and he'll respond right away. He's always happy to see you. He'd help you out if you needed help. And he's just a beauty guy. Like, just all around, you know, you'd want him to marry your sister. You'd want to go out for beers with him. You'd want to do everything with him. Like, he's just that type of guy.
Yeah. I saw this clip of Bieksa talking on the broadcast about, you know, their rivalries, the Canucks and Sharks, for so long. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm supposed to hate this guy, but I can't help it. I just love him. Like, he's just a great guy. And this is like at the height of their rivalry. So that's the kind of guy he is.
Yeah, I'll send you some pictures and videos we can post, and we'll throw them on the show's feed and stuff. Or I don't know if you did it already, but
some of them. Yeah, some of them.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. I don't want to belabor the point, but the guy was a beautiful guy. He deserves, he'll be in the Hall of Fame soon. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He was just so incredibly good. Watching the highlights. What the Bruins, when they traded him, could go down as one of the worst trades ever in the history of hockey.
I think it is probably the worst trade. We said this stat before, but he's the only player in any of the 4 major sports to be traded in the same year that they won MVP.
Yeah, he went to San Jose and won the Hart Trophy right away.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, and it's just like, I'm not dredging this up again.
Like, what could have been? Burned. And who'd they get? They get Brad Stewart.
Marco Sturm,
and a draft pick.
One other guy, I think. It was another player, Kobesu or one of those type of guys. But yeah, nothing.
Just for no reason, just because they didn't like him. They didn't think he was going to pan out. Like, what a disaster.
Yeah, and the comparison's always made with Sagan. Same thing, although Sagan's not the player that Jumbo was.
And I compare Jumbo, and I know San Jose was somewhat established at that point. I compare the success of the San Jose franchise to Wayne Gretzky going to LA, building the game, getting fans excited. Him going to San Jose changed the trajectory of that franchise. He immediately made them relevant. He immediately put them on the map and said, we are a team. We're a destination. Come here and play with these guys. He was still in his early 20s when he went there.
Yeah.
Like, it was just a huge, huge, just seismic shift of how people thought of San Jose at that point. So it was a massive deal. And Doug Wilson made a trade of the century, the best move he ever made. So.
It's NFL for all this Thanksgiving, with a week of Game Pass on DAZN for just $99. So come and watch all the games at our place.
Let's get this thing going.
Whether you're a stats king, tune in I 10 this month, or just here for turkey.
Only 2 things you need, turkey to eat and a football to throw.
Get every touchdown and every iconic tradition.
He's got it! Touchdown!
Celebrate Thanksgiving with DAZN for just $99. Buy now at DAZN.com/NFL.
Anyways, speaking of terrible moves by the Boston Bruins, the hits keep coming. So they fired their coach, Jim Montgomery, like we talked about. How long was he a free agent? 5 hours?
It was like 5 days, but yeah.
I think he was on the market for?
It's crazy.
So Doug Armstrong, the GM of the St. Louis Blues, wakes up, checks his phone. Holy crap. Montgomery's available. checks his phone again. Yeah, he got fired. Did he have any thoughts of firing his current coach? Not one at all. Not an inkling that he want to fire his coach. But what happened, Tim, after he found out that Jim Montgomery was on the market? What a good GM does?
Yeah, he didn't hesitate. And this is Montgomery was asked about why he accepted the offer so quickly. And, you know, aside from just having the job, but he said that he was a very good salesperson, Armstrong. He said the best line that put his hooks into me was, quote, when something delicious falls on my plate, I eat. That's what Doug Armstrong said. And when Montgomery is unavailable, you take him, which is to us obvious. We spent a lot of time on this last week, but I love that quote.
How does that make you feel as a Bruins fan? You're listening to an opposing GM just pretty much altering his team. It's a new coach. It's big. And he just drops his whole trajectory of his franchise and goes, oh, you know, this guy's that good. We need him on our team. And he fires his coach right away. How does that make you feel after you guys let him go and he wanted to stay in Boston?
Not good. I mean, I talked about this last week. There was not a surprise. And the same with Cassidy and Claude Julien before him 10 years ago. Like all three of those guys was about a week plus or minus. They were available and they all got hired right away. And then obviously they did great success after that. So very frustrating, kind of embarrassing. It doesn't really surprise me because we knew this was going to happen. Like he could have landed anywhere. And even other guys are tweeting out like there should be 20 coaches or 20 GMs firing their coach to bring in Montgomery. He's that good of a coach. And one of them did. And Drew Bannister was like the fifth shortest tenure to start a coaching career as a head coach with a team in 20 games or so, I think it was. So just not surprising. Good for the Blues. They look good. And Montgomery, like the way that he addresses the room is just, it's just so strong and personal and commendable. So yeah, it's frustrating. It's embarrassing. The Bruins have won two in a row since the change, but I expected that. I will see. Talk to me in a couple of weeks.
Well, we knew they were going to have success based on their schedule, but it's fleeting. They beat the Detroit Red Wings 2-1, and they beat the Utah Hockey Club 1-0. So big deal. We'll see how they play in the next couple of weeks when they actually get some competition. But we knew they were going to win. But it's a terrible look for the franchise.
It's a stain.
Because everybody and their brother knew that it was a mistake. It's not Montgomery's fault. There has to be a point when Jeremy Jacobs wakes up and he goes, we got to get rid of Neely and Sweeney. It has to happen. But who knows when that'll be, because Jacobs is a complete moron. So anyways, speaking of shaking things up, then just down the way from Massachusetts, New York City, the New York Rangers having a tough time losing hockey games. Can't figure it out. Rumors are swirling. They're going to make a big move. We heard this last year. Same old, same old. We're not going to touch on this too much. We'll go in more depth next week when we have some time. Do you think anything is there any credence to this? Is there any bone or any substance to these rumors, Tim?
Yeah, there's fire to this smoke. It started 2 days ago with Elliot Friedman said in the aftermath of their 6-2 loss to in Edmonton on Saturday, the Rangers have made it very clear they're interested in making some moves, shaking up their roster. Among the names indicated are Chris Kreider and Jacob Trouba, although other options will be considered. It was followed up with another report from Emily Kaplan, who said the same thing. And then just this morning, Chris Johnston from TSN, like, ooh, this is real. This is happening. Whether anyone takes those contracts on is unlikely. I mean, Kreider's in his 33, 34, many years left on his contract. This is the weirdest stat line, 9 goals, 0 assists.
He's always been like that. Yep.
Yeah, it's really strange. Jacob Trouba, like, given the captaincy and just not having a great season either. He's still a solid player and he can still, you know, check and he blocks and all that, but just none of those guys are living up to their potential. And it's weird because 12-7-1 is a solid start. Even for a team that had higher hopes to be down on themselves at 12-7-1 is something that a lot of teams would hope for. But the way that I see this differently, that I think is a good thing for the franchise, and I give some credit to Drury for this, is like not just saying, hey, you know what, at the end of the day, 12-7-1, we'll make the playoffs. Anything can happen there. Let's stick with what we got. We don't want to shake things up. And I feel like so many teams do that. The Bruins have done that for many years. He's saying, I don't care where we are in the standings right now. I know that we don't have it. And even if we get to the playoffs, there's no reason to expect that we can get by Carolina or Florida or some of these other, you know, wagons. So yeah, I think it's a good thing that he's doing this and not just leaving that for the players. And you've seen enough of a low effort performance from guys like Zibanejad and Kreider. Shesterkin's not playing great. Trocheck isn't playing great. Trouba is not playing great. Panarin's putting up the points. And then you have the young kids, the Coolies and Lafreniere. Kako's being okay. Box is still doing okay. So yeah, long-winded answer, but there's a lot right with this team, but I'm glad that they're fixing it anyway, because it wasn't going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I think the pieces that could potentially move, I think people would take Trocheck. I think they would want to maybe, you know, kick the tires on him, but he's still got 6 years left on his deal. That's a long, you know, runway for a guy like that. And I do disagree with you a little bit. I think teams would want a Chris Kreider. He's proven in the playoffs that he can produce. He scores goals. He goes to the tough areas. He's a mule when it comes to moving him in front of the net. He's great on the power play. So he does have a lot of value. He has a partial no trade clause, a 15-team no trade clause. He does carry 6.5 for the next 2 years, but those two guys could potentially be the ones that I would look to go, okay, if they want to shake this team up, those are the guys that are going to move. You're not getting out from Trouba. There's no way whatsoever. He's got a no trade list as well. Unless you trade him to a team like the Utah Hockey Club, they got some LTIR space now with on the back end. Yeah. They got some injury problems, but it's those two guys up front. You're not getting out of Zibanejad. That guy's not going anywhere. He's got 8.5 for another 6 years to 2030. Can you believe that?
It was two games ago where the horrible behind the net pass to Trouba. Do you see that? And then he doesn't chase it. And they score right away. And then last night, there's a big scrum at the end of the period, and he just doesn't engage at all. He just watches the thing. It's just brutal.
Yeah, and their saving grace last year, their power play was incredible. It sucks this year. Well, it doesn't suck this year.
It's still like 20%, but I think it's just not good. And like last year, it hid some of the other issues they had. Yeah. And now those issues are getting exposed. And I think a big part of this is Shesterkin, where he's playing for his big contract right now. And you can't look at them and say, okay, this is an $11 million goalie. You know, like this is, he's not. So we'll see. It's still November. Things could change, but I'm glad that there's some excitement here.
Well, and one point, if you're Chris Drury, do you go, is this even the team we want to build around with Igor Shesterkin? Like, why invest so heavily in that goaltender? I don't care how good he is. Do we want to, you know, invest that much money in him when we have so many other holes to fill? Like, we are so dysfunctional up front. Our defense could use some help. Do we really want to throw that much money on the back end when there are teams who would take that contract? Don't look now, the Carolina Hurricanes got some issues in the back end. Peter Kachetkov went down the other day with an injury. Go ahead.
We talked about this with Olivier the other day, that game. Kachetkov challenged the puck in overtime, and Werenski was kind of pushed by the Canes defenseman, and Kachetkov's neck just snapped back, and it looked bad. It looked like he might have lost consciousness for a sec, because he froze up like a skeleton. And so now he's out long-term. Anderson was already out long-term, 8 to 12 weeks. So Kevin Weeks reported that they're exploring goalie options on the market. So you could see them picking somebody up. I don't think it's going to be anyone of Shesterkin's caliber.
Well, if those two guys going to go on LTIR, that gives them $5.5 million, saying they both go down and you trade back, maybe someone is Barry Kokonemi or something. He makes foreign change. So there could be some avenues to make this work. How good would Shesterkin look in Hurricane red, white, black? They would catapult 100%. I know I say you build a team down the middle on the back end. They got decent centers. They got great defense, and just adding Shesterkin it won't happen. But it's just fun to kind of hypothesize. But anyways,
Can you think off the cuff? Like, I'm just trying to think of of young goaltenders, potentially franchise pieces that were moved because they just didn't, the ownership didn't believe in them. The same way with Sagan or Eichel or even Jumbo. Like, are there goalie examples of that? I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Potentially.
Yeah, I guess, but he's never really played in the NHL. You know, yeah.
Roberto Luongo.
Yeah, that would be a good one. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe there's some more. Send us some examples if you can think of any.
Yeah. Moving on. The Sabres, my former team, they beat the San Jose Sharks when I was there on Jumbo's night. This was just two bad teams going at it. It was just
How does Celebrini look?
Celebrini looked good. Will Smith looked good. They should have had a couple points. They just couldn't put it together. They did look smooth. Will Smith, number two. It's so weird still to see him at the number two. I'm like, are you a defenseman? But anyways, my wife were watching the game. And this is honest to God what she said. She's like, is this a game? Like, are they playing right now? I'm like, yeah, why? She goes, there's just nobody's hitting anybody. Not one hit in over 10 minutes of time. We sat there and watched. There was one hit. That's it in one period. It's such a strange, and you watch it on TV, maybe it doesn't kind of translate, but when you watch it live, you're used to glass rattling, the skates ripping around the ice, all this stuff. That part of the game is gone. It's so weird to see a game live. I haven't watched one in a long time, and it's really sad. There's no hits, Tim, not one that I could, you know, point out and be like, that was a hell of a hit. Not one. It's crazy.
I mean, she's not wrong, but I think these are two teams that aren't, you know, overly physical. If it was Florida and Flyers or someone like that, it might have been something different. But yeah, I think not surprising. It's interesting to see like Danielle, who has not only not been to a game in many years, but hasn't followed hockey whatsoever in 5 years, right? And so she has no idea what the trends are, and she's coming in cold and seeing a huge difference in what she remembers.
It was still an enjoyable game. Don't get me wrong; it was just a different kind of enjoyable. There was chances, there was breakaways, there was good passing, but there was no hits at all, no physical play, none. Like not one scrum, not one anything. But the Buffalo Sabres got the win, and don't look now, they've won 7 of their last 10. They're slowly creeping up. They just passed the Boston Bruins in the standings because the Bruins are in free for all. Even though they've won the last 2, they're still just in chaos. And the Sabres are taking advantage. They're 4th place now in the Eastern Conference, firmly in a playoff position, the second wild card spot. So is this the year to? And we're not going to spend too much time on this, but it's looking pretty good. They're a quarter of the way through the season and they're in the playoff spot. Thanksgiving is this week.
I hope so. I mean, we've been waiting for this for 3 years, and maybe a lot of that was premature, but it seems like hopefully they've broken through a little bit. There's a lot to like about this team on paper, and I think you want more from some of the younger guys, and you want more from the stars like the Tages of the world. Tuck's playing pretty well. I still don't think they have the long-term, you know, solution between the pipes. That's obviously a hard position to fill. But I hope they're breaking through into at least playing. If they make the playoffs, that'll be so fun.
Yeah.
I don't care if they get swept. Like, let us just watch them in the playoffs and just give them a chance to get excited in Buffalo again. And yeah, I hope so. I hope they do.
I will say Rasmus Dahlin looked incredible. He looked really strong, in control, just
smooth, right?
Smooth, but also big. And like imposing, he was a very, very noticeable piece on that ice when I watched. There wasn't a few players that, you know, stood out, and he was the one. I was like, damn, he's good on all facets, all ends of the ice. So he's a good one. I knew he would be a good captain. I knew it.
Yeah, sure. We don't want to be too nice. He did ghost us this summer, so maybe we'll come back on.
I should have went and confronted him because we saw the guys when they were walking in. I didn't want to cause a scene. All right. Anything else, Tim? Yeah.
No, like you said, that'll be it for us this week. We'll be back next week. What are you doing for Thanksgiving, John? You hosting?
Be working at the house, doing the electrical. I really got to get that squared away before my boiler gets here the 1st of December. So I need to get the electrical in, get that inspected, spray foam, boiler hooked up. Then we can have heat in the house. But yeah, that's what I'll be doing. And then we're going to go to my wife's parents for Thanksgiving. First time in a while. So we're not hosting, which is very nice because our house sucks and having people over is awful. So it'll be a nice little break for us, especially coming back from San Jose.
That's great. That's cool.
But anyways, I hope everybody has a good Thanksgiving. If you're in the United States, if you're in Canada, just have a good weekend, everybody. We will, we'll talk to you next week. Cheers, everybody.
Pete here from the Football Ramble, which is being sponsored by LiveScore Bet. This football season, experience total betting for yourself. It's everything you love about LiveScore, like the latest scores and cutting-edge stats, alongside great odds, offers, free-to-play games, and a slick bet builder. It's everything you need in one place. Less app hopping, more action. Download the LiveScore Bet app. T's and C's apply. Please bet responsibly. 18+, gamblerware.org.